slides, and then I'll ask you for your explanation.
Okay.
First off, TIFs are authorized under RCW 82.02, and within the specific Clark County Code, under Subtitle 6 of our Development Code. The way that we measure or assess TIFs is based on this formula that you see in front of you. It is based on the size of development, and then there's several reductions that occur, such as pass-by factors, business enhancement factors that apply to service and retail uses, as well as a 15% reduction for received revenue for property taxes that come with new development. And then that fee is multiplied based on the TIF rate that's established for each district. So why are we going through this? Back in 1999, we established a joint program with the City of Vancouver that established four boundaries, TIF districts, excuse me, that cross jurisdictional lines. Back in December 2014, the City Council adopted a program that was exclusive to the City of Vancouver that established two separate districts within the city. Because we manage four joint districts, it's dependent on us to develop a system that's exclusive to Clark County. I want to remind folks as I go through this that while we have the TIF fee waiver program in place, the program update for the TIF and the fee waiver are mutually exclusive. We can update the TIF program without requiring any changes to the current TIF fee waiver. We do also still collect fees based on residential development. The TIF fee waiver program is established only for those job spaces. So there's several elements of this TIF program that we have analyzed and are providing recommendations for changes moving forward. I'm going to go through each one of these different elements, and feel free to ask questions as I go. First, we'll start with the TIF districts. I'll go through the existing district system, the three different concepts that we analyze, and show you our final recommendation for our district system. First off, the current program has nine separate districts. Two of those are within the city limits of Vancouver. They are Vancouver and the East City. Four of them are shared with Clark County and the city. They include East City as well, Evergreen, Orchard South, and Hazeldale. And the final two districts in unincorporated urban area are exclusive to Clark County. They are the Mount Vista and the Orchard area. And then as far as the rural area, we got pretty creative with our naming convention and naming those rural areas.
You couldn't even do it east or west or north or...
So with concept one, this was the first potential boundary system that we looked at. We combined the two Orchards districts, the north and south, into one Orchards district. The Evergreen and East City district fell to the Rural 1 area. And then within the Hazeldale district, the entire Highway Sub 99 sub area was added into the Hazeldale district. Currently, the district is at the Salmon Creek. So this analyzed Highway 99 inside of Hazeldale. The concept two that we looked at was combining the two rural areas into one, and then maintaining the split at the same grade between Mount Vista and Hazelville. It also combined the North Orchards. The next concept, the final concept that we looked at was concept three, and this was a very simplified area as far as split between urban and rural. Again, the fragments of evergreen and deciduous go between the rural. When we evaluated these systems, the criteria developed for analyzing them were both simple to the public and for staff to administer. And most importantly, that it's defensible. When we talk about the defensible, we're talking about maintaining that nexus between the trip generation based on the growth and the facilities that run each district. So the way that we did this was to maintain the defensibility was we're basically using the travel demand model to balance both the simplicity as well as the amount of growth that's projected in each district combined with the amount of traffic that's forecast for each capital facilities. We forecasted this growth based on the two travel demand models, the base year 2010 and the future year to 2035. We've determined that growth and then subtracted the 5 years to determine the final growth that's expected between current year 2015 and 2035. Within the model, we use this select link feature, and I'm sure a lot of you have looked at this. This is a analysis where you can look at each different project and find out where the trips are coming to and where they're destined to. So you can basically capture where the trips, what districts they're going to, and which districts they end up in. And then that allows you to analyze the different concepts. As an example, here's a best one. So there's a project on our capital facilities plan. It's Highway 99 between 99th Street and 107. As you can see in concept one here, you have 67% of the trips from the Hazelville district using that facility. In concept two, that number is reduced, so it's 59%. So for concept two, the way that this works out in the end is 32% of Mount Vista is paying for that Highway 99 project, even though that Highway 99 project is within the Hazelville district. Are you following me?
Mm-hmm.
So, with this analysis, it is favorable for concept one to have that Highway 99 sub area fully contained within the Hazelville district. As far as evaluating concept three to the rest, you can see in concept one and two that for that Orchards district, only 3% of the trips are hitting that section. So, but in concept three, they're paying a fair share of that project. So that's kind of the balance that we're looking for as far as analyzing each one of these concepts.
Can I interrupt just for a second?
Sure.
When you use the word fair share, does that mean significant or their, what they should pay
proportionate? So with that, we have our recommended concepts. And as I mentioned earlier, we have that Highway 99 sub area fully within the Hazelville district. It also takes some of concept two, which combines all of the rural area into one. So the recommended concept is more of a hybrid between one and two than it is a separate project. In order to develop our capital project list, we use the capital facilities plan. Now, as you remember, the capital facilities plan is our 20-year look at what our need is to support the growth management program. The TIF eligible list includes all of the projects within the capital facilities plan except three: road preservation, bridge repair and rehab, and transportation safety improvements. The reason why these three projects are not in the TIF eligible project list is because those are ongoing projects that are needed regardless of if there's growth. Make sense? Okay. That entire list is in the proposed technical document to receive. I believe this is in your packet. It's exhibit 2. So unfortunately, I did not have page numbers, but it is exhibit C, and it is labeled 2B in your agenda packets. So that shows the TIF eligible capital project list. If you look on the next page, exhibit D, you can see the private share. Now what the private share, the way that we define private share is all of these projects are currently getting volumes hit. Private share is the new growth from 2015 to 2035. So that private share, if you look in exhibit D, for the first one, Northeast 119 between 72nd and 87th Street, private share is 32%. So in other words, that segment is expected to increase by 32%. The share of that project, 16% of the 32 goes to Hazeldale, 22% to Mount Vista, 44% to Port Charles, and 17% to Rural. So, again, those separate columns as they relate to the districts are a portion of the private share. So what we do with Exhibit D is we take that portion of the project cost and assign it to each district, and then come up with the total district amount and divide it by the amount of growth that's expected from it. And that derives the recommended TIF rates. Here you can see rates moving forward. Hazeldale District would go from $375 to $283. Mount Vista, $613 to $437. Again, the North Orchards and the South Orchards are combined from $553 and $389 to go down to $348. Rule 1 and Rule 2 is combined to go from $315 and $53 to $271. So out of all of these districts, the Rule 2 would increase. All of the other ones are decreasing.
So Matt, just so that so how everything comes together that we can talk about, the changes to the concurrency ordinance,
yeah,
changes to capital facilities plan, not as many projects are then needed based on that. Therefore, there are fewer projects on here. Therefore, the TIF goes down.
Correct.
Right?
Correct.
And And then the second question I have is, what was the reasoning behind combining the Rural 1 and Rural 2 into one rural?
Simplicity. We've heard from both our county council that they wanted fewer districts. That was big. Just behind it. Another one was just the fact that the current rate of $52, they have a greater share of those to those projects than they can be paid. The TIF credit system, our proposal is to continue to offer credits for TIF eligible improvements that are in excess of the TIF responsibility. Just to clarify, there's a little bit of different nomenclature behind the TIF credit system and the TIF excess credit system. You get TIF credits if you contribute to a project for your development that's part of the capital facilities plan. The excess credit occurs when you contribute in excess of what your TIF responsibility is.
How often does that happen?
Quite a bit. There's several TIF credits. There's several folks that do have TIF credits.
But you said that when they contribute to a project that's TIF creditable, I mean, it's on the capital facilities plan, and they're building up their part of it, and they didn't get TIF credits. But the second part of that is when you say that they contribute more.
Excess. So for example, say you have a TIF fee of $100,000 that you're responsible for,
right?
And you contribute 30% of a capital facilities program, your TIF charge would then be 70% of the $70,000.
Right.
So if you contribute 100, if you build that project on the capital facilities program, and it's a greater amount than what you are responsible for. Then you can apply for TIF.
Gotcha. I was just wondering what the situation was that would cause that. Okay, that makes sense. Thank you.
The second proposal that we are doing is to transfer the outstanding credits to the new system. As you can see before, bear with me as I switch slides real quick. So the existing system has both north and south orchards, and by the way, the districts based on the recommended concept are getting larger. So the reasoning behind transferring the credits was to offer those credit holders more opportunities to transfer trade and use those credits within the system. The next changes that we're proposing are to our actual Title 40, Clark County Code, and that's sections 40.610.040 and 40.620.010. And you can see those items in item 2C in your packet. The first change that we're planning on that we'd like to implement is to remove the three-year vesting. Currently, if a project comes in at preliminary plat, they are assessed or their traffic impact fee is calculated, and that is good for 3 years. There was a case law, Newcastle versus La Center, that determined that TIF fees do not vest. TIF fees are also, for the most part, planned on decreasing. Therefore, we would like to implement the fact that TIF fees will be calculated at the time of building permit. With that said, with this process, I forgot to mention that we had two stakeholder advisory, or one stakeholder advisory group, one technical advisory. advisory group that helped us with this program. Stakeholder advisory group, is it fair to say you want the current system in place?
Yes.
Why is that?
Well, this is the same thing that the city
had. Or should you want to wait on this, on the question part of it? I'm sorry.
Just on that one, just on certainty. Otherwise, I think the group liked everything else that was done and agreed with everything else. Full support, except for the one item. And it's just basically, you have 3 years of certainty, so you know what your fees
are. I misunderstood what the point was. I thought you disliked the change in its entirety.
We were very supportive of amendments here, the simplification.
This one item.
But in particular, this one item related to relying on the Newcastle case and not allowing investing of TIF fees, as we do not support that. Yeah. I think it goes back to similarly, the city of Vancouver looked at doing that, and then they pulled back because they want to give predictability to business, and you guys were out there building that.
I think we kind of recommend the hybrid. You can pick either one. You have the option to invest for 3 years, or you can go to the current. That's the language we were suggesting. And the reason is, the default is to invest, or go to the new rates. And it's that policy is assuming they go down over time. Historically, they've gone up. Just recently, they started to go down. So, I mean, they could double. You could get a project approved, those TIF fees could double, and they have it at one point not long ago. And then your TIF fees are twice as high as what you got financing for when we put it in the form.
When we did North Orchards, brought in that urban holding area, there was a variety of development agreements that were out there investing rates at like $293 per trip. And then after that was lifted, remaining properties got stuck with those. That's doubling that we're kind of concerned with, I guess.
The concern from staff's perspective as far as this change is that currently we're seeing preliminary plats that were assessed the higher rate that now want the lower rate. Because TIF fees have gone down.
Could you see under with the option scenario? So it's the developer that would pick the option, right? So I'm going to wear two hats.
You just go to the lesser. I mean, you don't have to really choose. It's one or the lesser of the TIF credit for 3 years or the current rate. And it could be very simple.
Why can't we just? But did you guys recommend just keeping it the way it is? Not or?
No, with the lesser.
This sort of a hybrid.
The lesser of, that's what I'm going to do.
You can choose the lower amount under the new proposed.
Oh, at the time of, okay.
Or you select your investor.
At the time of the building permit.
Yeah, but because most of the rates are sort of different.
My concern would be,
is it at the time of the building permit issuance, or is it at the time of the final plat approval?
Building permit.
Right. But the lesser of.
Yes.
Okay, because my concern would be the developers might, the developers might pick up the TIFs and choose the one option because thinking they're going to be worth more and the builders are going to pay more for.
So of course they will.
So yeah. The county's doing that now. They're letting you go with the lesser of, but you have to do a post-season review. That's a lot of paperwork for everybody. So it just eliminates that extra process that bogs down staff and it frees them up to do more important work.
Thank you. I was just a little confused.
Lesser of numbers, I mean, all that work's gone.
But this is what to me, just looking at it from the short term perspective, it seems like there's a good gain for the development community, but in the long term,
Yeah, you're driving.
You're driving playing right. A little bit of pressure with that.
The other gain for the development community is the expanded or reduced number of districts, expanded area where you can transfer whatever credits you might have.
Yeah.
Yes, that's a plus.
That is a plus.
And it's simplified, it's easier to track,
right.
Predict.
So the work products that we are implementing these changes to are both in the development code that I showed before you in item 2C, and then the recommendations to the technical document in exhibit 2B. And the TIF program technical document is referenced within the Clark County code, so that's what gives it the transferring of the credits would be implemented through the work.
Matt, on item 2B, we list the trip generation. Is that straight out of the ninth edition?
It is. The changes to the trip generation code, you can see them as far as the strike through. There, we also clarify the unit of measurement, whether it's gross floor area or gross lease area. Actually, the one change that is significant is use code 817. And that is the nursery garden center. It goes from daily trip generation of 36.08 to 68.10. That's a big change. And the reason why there was that change straight out of the IT trip generation manual is the sample size got higher.
You also indicate the unit of measure in there. I know that in ITE there's a number of different ways that you can measure. That's still available to.
Yeah, so. Okay.
This isn't locked into just 1,000 square feet.
Correct.
I need you to clarify then if it's not locked into what it says in this on the trip generation.
So, the clarification I was going to make is if a development comes in that does not agree with the trip generation, can conduct a localized survey, and that's the mechanism to. I guess appeal the current.
Even if there are other industry-approved ways of measurement for the trips.
Well, we have to. When you do that, we have to be really careful about that. So the units of measure that we have in this technical document. So when you look at say. A commercial retail building and the like an AM PM gas station. Okay, so you have a convenience mart with fuel pumps. So at times in the past, people have come in saying we want X number of square feet of our convenience store for. Display purposes, our sales of our candy bars and whatever, and then the rest of it is going to be warehouse. This is where we're going to stock our stuff. If you start breaking things out and you get it approved in the broken out fashion, there's no way for us to track what happens on the interior now. So now, instead of 500 square foot of retail, you have got a tenant improvement, you've expanded it to 700 square feet of retail and a little bit of storage area. So, now, We want to take the highest and best use, so it's by the square footage. You can also, on those, you can calculate it by fueling station or fueling position. If you do it by fueling position, then this is probably an extremely bad example because I'm struggling with it right now.
Well, I know that there are different ways of measurement of trips associated with different uses. There's per 1,000 square feet of gross floor area as one of them, and it's probably the most common. publish different uses there. Otherwise, there's a number of employees, there's a number of buildings, there's a number of drive-through windows.
So the most frequent one that I had, and it just popped into my head, is a school. You can do it by students, you can do it by square footage. Okay, so a school district comes in, they want to build a brand new school, and they want to tell you that their enrollment, they're estimating their enrollment at 500 students. Now, what they want to do is we're having 500 students, and it generates X number of trips. And now we want to expand the facility just so that we can spread the students out a little bit more. Well, when you expand the facility, you gain the capacity for more students to fill it back up. If we keep it at students, we would have to limit that land use at 500 students. You can't have any more than 500 students.
Unless you pay more, sir.
If we go building square footage.
It's a track. I mean, it's kind of a track. How do you track the changes?
All right. So that's, the student population is going to expand and contract and do what it needs to do to facilitate itself. But if we go with building square footage, now we calculate you at the building square footage rate, and your student population can now fluctuate the way it needs to. But the second you add more square footage, you come back in and we see you again, and we recalculate the impact, trip impact.
Right.
So that's probably a better example.
So Mike, just to clarify, the table is based on daily, it's based on 1,000 square foot gross.
Right, but what I'm saying is this table going to go in the technical?
It's going to go in the technical document.
Okay, so what I'm saying is that, what my question is then that the only way in Clark County that you are able to calculate the trips generated from any particular project, regardless of whether or not there are other accepted means by which to figure out those trips from IT?
Yes.
Okay. Was that brought up during the technical advisory committee?
We didn't set up the technical
side. Sorry.
We were on the stakeholders.
This has always been, the 1,000 square feet has always been in place.
No different. Okay.
The change that's made is the clarification as far as gross floor area or gross
leasable area. Okay.
That's the only change that's
made. Okay.
It's more of a clarification. And then with the column daily trips per unit, that's an update based on.
Okay. Somebody should have said, Odrum, this is the way it's always been. We're just changing this. I'm going to save this a lot of time.
That's all I had to say, Mike.
I'm sorry. I'm going to save you a lot of time. That's my
grief.
Sorry, Mike.
That's
okay.
When it's appropriate, I want to ask a question based on what I heard David say. The highest and best use, David, you said that the rate will be calculated on highest and best use, regardless of how it was, the building itself was put to use.
Right. So if you had a building that we wanted warehouse with 500 square feet where the retail showroom of some sort.
Yeah.
I think we would have to be really careful with that one because the retail component, again, once you're in the building as approved as a warehouse, that's a really low trip generator, but you get a tenant improvement, you expand the retail component, and now you're way above anything that we'd ever anticipated for a warehouse.
Can I respond to that?
Sure.
I agree wholeheartedly with the intent and the desire we all have for compliance. But what that does is it punishes the rule follower rather than punishing the cowboy. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Yes. Everybody is thrown in the same bucket, and it's not fair.
Also,
it's not equitable.
Isn't there a mechanism in place when staff is reviewing a tenant improvement to review that against the original land use decision to see what the original uses were for?
Well, and
I know that you have, because I've been involved with projects where we've got a multi-tenant building approved for X square feet of general office and X square feet of medical office. If we had it all medical office, all of a sudden the project doesn't work because the tips are too high. Now, when they come in for a medical office, an additional medical office use in the TI over and above what the project was originally approved for, they calculated at that new, that tenant improvement at that higher rate. And make up the difference, do they not?
When you have, when you go over and above the medical, if you're expanding on the TI,
yeah.
I think it does get caught downstairs because now they're asking questions about parking.
Right.
But if it was, yeah.
Or at least through the post-decision review process to be able to go through and say, here is the additional trips that your project is going, you're all built that. You know, it goes through a land use review to make sure there's still enough parking as well as the additional tips that will generate.
Right, and once your project is built out, all we're interested in at that point is the net difference.
Yes, right.
Yeah. So that's why you don't have to go to the best and highest if you've got another crack at it. So you go with the best estimate.
I've argued this with staff before. Highest and best use on a 30,000 square foot building at medical office, when all you're going to have is one tenant that's going to be a dentist and all they're going to take up is 8,000 square feet, really isn't that equitable. Especially when the difference between the TIFs between general office and medical office are astounding.
Yeah.
David, it's important because it matters in the marketplace.
Oh, sure.
It will be business unfriendly. I would rather see some kind of an inspection program, a verification program, certainly when you come in for a permit, of course. But if you feel there's a need for more regular verification, do that rather than take this. I don't mean this to be bad language, but it's the easy way out.
Sure.
To require, to ensure 100% compliance, but it's not going to fail.
Is that highest and best use really been in the code, or is that just a policy?
It's been policy is what it has been. There, at a point in the past, I believe staff had been burned pretty badly. So
sure.
It was kind of a cover-all. And when I started here, that's the policy I was told. So I think, you know.
So since it's policy, maybe it's time to get back into the conversation.
Definitely, yeah.
Good way to stare it back.
Sorry, Matt.
We can talk about this later.
So the next steps as far as our implementation, we're asking for a recommendation from you today. Next, we have a work session with the Planning Commission this evening, followed by a hearing on June 18th. This is an evening hearing, because the Planning Commission always is coming here. We have County Council work session scheduled for July 8th, and a tentative date for a hearing on July 21st. In between Planning Commission and the work session, we'll be briefing the counselors on our updates so that it doesn't all come because this is a very complicated process.
So, we're looking for a motion, Mr. Chair.
I'd like, before we go, so you guys more questions.
I am, just to clarify, I think you're the only TIF credit holder in the room. You'll be getting a letter notifying you.
Does anyone have any more questions for Matt before we...
Matt, you know how similar this proposed version, what do you call it?
Update
is to the City of Vancouver's current
It's very similar. The city of Vancouver did away with honoring, and not honoring, I should say that, with issuing excess credits. They moved to a latecomer agreement process. We are still continuing to process the excess TIF credits. We may be the only jurisdiction in the state that does this. Other changes, we've used the same methodology. Instead of describing projects based on, in the old system, what we did was, if it was a collector or lower classification that the capital facilities plan was on, we determined that that was a local project specific to the TIF district. What you guys all know is, even with the classification, there's trips that hit it from outside of that district. So our methodology then expanded it so that they're basically all, they're capturing the percentage of trips that they're contributing. That was a difference with us.
Thank you. Any other questions for Matt?
Thank you, Matt.
Yeah, we appreciate it.
Thanks, Matt.
Yeah,
good job.
I think, Jamie, before we get to a motion, maybe as a group, we should just come on through this.
Sure.
I think you're a little more familiar with being on one of the committees, sort of everything that's gone into this. So I want to open it to any sort of internal discussion before the motion discussion. One thing I'm still getting my head wrapped around is the code changes to section 40. Sounds like maybe your recommendation was a little bit different from
staff.
I want to get a better understanding of that.
I think that's what I wanted to include in my notion.
Okay. If I haven't had a chance to read this.
Again, the city, when they did their update, which was now several months ago, several of us participated in their process as well. I think Matt was also on there. After the process had concluded, the city was looking at invoking the Newcastle Data Center case in order not to vest the TIFs. A bunch of us sort of behind the scenes had discussions with staff, legal counsel, others, and the city moved swiftly away from that. Just think from a timing perspective, as the economy is still in recovery mode, it's important that we give our developers predictability, especially in these uncertain times of financing. So we thought it was justifying the case here. I think this is a little bit unique in that the city's fees were actually going up a little bit. Here, obviously, they're going down with the exception of rural 2 district. But I think I'm just looking at it more from a long-term perspective of the rates will come back up again.
Right.
And when that happens, do we really want to have that happen?
I think it's
from the development community's perspective, win this battle and lose the war, so to speak. And so
sure.
I would suggest that we go along the lines of Derek's suggestion, is that for the time being, at least, that we maintain the existing code language and then just have that flexibility with staff to recognize and potentially promote TIF rates. I think it's been working.
Without
a question.
So, question to follow up to that. From the county's perspective, did the county, so to speak, buy inventory at the higher TIF rate? What's going to happen if we go to the TIF vested or 3-year vested or whichever is lower language? Is the county stuck with inventory, so to speak, the old TIF fees that they can't recapture? Or is it a floating marketplace where it's at the time of sale or time of purchase?
I wish I could answer that question, but that's a question for Chris Warner. Unfortunately, he's not here. I would hate to guess on that.
I don't know if...
If it floats, then there's really no, there's no harm, no foul.
Right.
It doesn't matter.
Did you account for the vested TIF fee? I think what Art's question is, did you account for the vested TIF fees when you calculated the new ones based on the capital plan?
The
value of the the program.
I don't know that it's calculated that way, but I could be wrong. I think they're only counting on the money they have in their pocket.
Right.
In the capital facilities plan. The rest is all speculative because you don't know when it's going to come.
Correct.
And it could be after the 3 years. And so I'm not positive, but I'm pretty sure.
Those TIF rates that are vested now doesn't mean the options are going to happen.
So if that was disregarded in the calculations, then the new TIF rates cover everything that's coming up.
And Matt, I believe it's based on the current project that are the CFP.
Was that your basic question?
Yeah. It was the county going to be hung out short, so to speak. So
I don't have an answer. Yeah. Just based on the recent adjustment to our capital facilities.
At least for me, it's a much easier version to support vesting or 3-year vesting or whichever is lower time of issuance. I don't think there's a lose scenario to that.
The reality, though, is that when we actually go build the project with the TIF money, is they usually cost more and, you know, time's gone by. So, because I kind of queried Matt on this when we were going over the proposal, and it's not meant to be a living, constant thing. So, because if you try to do that, it turns into a big old accounting nightmare, I think. Because the projects are changing costs, and time is changing about when it's paid versus when it's spent, and before, during, after. So it's just what's based on there at the time. I mean, I think that was a good... Yeah. Response from Matt, and I think that's very reasonable. It makes the accounting system more simple, both on your side and ours. Because we're trying to spend it, and it's, you know, economy's moving all over here. Examples of the doubling or halving of the fees, the projects are moving around too. So does that help you?
It's perfect, yeah.
Okay.
As far as TIFs, remember the basis for TIFs is to support the development that's expected, support the growth management. And the growth management plan is supported with the capital facilities plan. So the TIF rates are responding to what is identified to support the growth.
So the flip side of that, the project starting, they have to secure funding from the bank. And they get loans based on certain expected costs. So having some certainty, it's only a 3-year block, so you don't expect the capital facilities plan to change that much. And in theory, it shouldn't be doubling or halving. Should be minor changes here and there, unless there's a complete revamp or a complete change in the system. So that wouldn't expect that to happen regularly, right?
No, the only thing we do, if I may just chime in, the only thing we do, and I'm sure we're going to continue to do that, is to add the inflation factor. That's about it. Just make some minor changes.
Sure, that's fine.
Yeah,
but
at the same time, even if when you face that preliminary, you still don't pay that until you pull your building permit. You know? So, mm-hmm. You know, something to think about. But the only changes we'll be making is just adjusting for inflation and see what the new fees will be. But I agree with Caroline that, you know, the project cost changes and so forth. If we have to make some minor changes, we'll do that. But, you know, that's your recommendation. We're wrong with it. But I think we want to simplify this on board games, you know, as we think it's going forward.
The issue that Eric noted is just, it's, I mean, the large thing is we continue to battle on business side moving into the area is predictability, and that's about what's usable as well as cost associated. So that works well on the business side. If you're right on the housing side, that necessarily will not be, those fees won't necessarily be vested and taken advantage of one way or the other. When we get to the actual housing permits, it will be a small portion of percentage of that project. But I think it has a greater impact on the commercial side and a benefit there. And that's really what we're trying to. CRDC was a big backer of this. The realtors were backer of this, and MBA wasn't. But that was why it was really focused more so on job, business growth, not housing.
Yeah.
They were supportive of what exactly?
When City of Vancouver came out with the concept of not vesting the fees, of basically let's not take that step because it's going to be one more thing that's unpredictable cost-wise for business to relocate to this area. So when they're looking at their site costs, they just hear, well, it moves, and they don't know how much that target can move on the rest of the TIF fee.
This is just for me. I can fully support the vesting part, but I get that part. But vesting works both ways. Sometimes you get stuck on the wrong side of it.
Right.
And that's the dilemma we're having here right now. We're trying to fix that wrong side of it. But I'm just not sure that that's equitable for the county. As much as it is for me, I mean, I want it for sure.
Because it's moving on both sides. I mean, that's the reality is.
That's right.
Yeah, there's risk, and there's risk.
It's only 3 years.
3 year lock.
Yeah.
It provides a little bit of certainty for the typical process. It takes to get from application to construction.
But I'm just not sure that that ethically you can say, we'll take vesting except when it doesn't work for us.
Well, I'm going to give a little world example.
Yeah.
So let's say I come in, and I'm going to put a fast forward a few years because this is where I'm getting the problem happening. Let's say we're in 2021 and Mr. Nathan wanted to do a medical office.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And you lock in at those rates that we're seeing up here and you're predicating your financing and your project cost on that. And lo and behold, we started in our next GMA update and we realized, 1.12%, but we were a little bit off. So it was moved to 2% or whatever it is.
Yeah.
And then our capital facilities plan will necessitate, and the dollar shooting said yes, will necessitate increasing significantly to make up that difference. And so the TIF rates will go from 300 and whatever to maybe 700, 800.
Yeah, double.
Double easily overnight, and if the vesting issue isn't in place, you won't have time to react. If you vested there within 3 years and you don't bring your project to market, obviously you're going to be recalculating things and reshifting your financing around. But if you're counting on that in order to deliver your project to market within that 3 year window, then it can be a tremendous amount, especially on a commercial.
Jimmy, I think I'm not communicating clearly.
Yeah.
I fully support the vesting portion of it.
Right.
What I'm struggling with is vesting at the low at a certain rate unless rates go down, and then it's not vested anymore. You get the rate at time of purchase.
So
whichever is less thing is.
So it just needs some help justifying that. Which I'm not sure.
Yeah, the purpose of it provides certainty.
Huh?
The purpose of it is
the vesting provides certainty. You got stuck at the wrong side of it, like we all do sometimes. Or you capture the right side.
Well, I mean, to me, my reaction to that, Odd, is since a lot of these rates were put into place, a couple things are happening. One is we're reducing the number of TIF districts down significantly. So, in theory, you can spread those allocations over a broader geographic basis. On top of that, we are going through the GMA update, and it just happens that we're just these processes that are coinciding with each other. And because of that lower growth rate, our project list is also reflective of that. And so I think it's just a unique time where these two things are aligning.
I think you kind of argued Ott's point earlier when you said, oh, look, the growth rate was 2%, now we have to increase all the, you know.
Yeah.
That's where the vesting comes in really handy, but that's also where you can pay the going rate if it's less than what you were vested at, hurts the county.
Although they're doing it now, they just have a bunch of process. So by adding that language in, it prevents a lot of that. Access processes.
So you can do it.
Well, still do it.
That helps you guys. That doesn't necessarily help us. It gets us to where Ott was going.
What's the city do? The city has vesting for TIF. They did reduce their TIF. They either a PAC or
so that strict vesting, there's no opportunity for them to change if the TIF changes or goes down. They have a mechanism by which they can go, applicant can go through and invest at the new TIF rate.
Gary?
So Matt, are we going to continue the annual TIF update? So every year the construction cost index comes out and we adjust the TIF rate based on that. So I just can't see it going from 1.1% up to 5-6% all of a sudden in a year.
So let me just summarize the issues. The concern, I think, from removing the 3-year vesting is if TIF rates go up, then you're locked in. On the opposite side, TIF fees are going down now. So the issue is you could potentially be locked in with a higher rate. The trend is to move downward. So with that said, the question that I have, and I don't know the answer to this because I'm not on the private side, is if you want to increase certainty and reduce risk and have that fee locked in, how is it different, rather than having a note from the county that says this is your TIF rate, how is that different than calculating it yourself?
So on the from my perspective, the 3-year, it gives us that certainty to build our performance because it takes a while to deliver a project. Under the scenario where it will go down now, and if, let's say I have a lock, let's say I'm just in this project, six, whatever the gateway is called. And let's say I have a large commercial project, why wouldn't I wait 3 years to get the lower rating? So
or
I'm delaying bringing a good project to the market.
There's a fee waiver right now. We do have a process, post decision review.
Yeah.
Oh, I'm just struggling with the good for us, good for everybody. Then this is better. We'll take both sides. I like the vesting. I think that's important. But you're vested higher. You're vested low. That's the definition of vesting. So that's where I would land.
Okay.
And I think where Eric was going with this, just for clarification, is that you can still do it. You can still get the lower rate if the rate falls below what you're vested at. You just have to go through the process to do that.
Yeah, right. That's what's at now.
That's what's
right. It's just a lot of extra process for staff. Okay. I don't know. I'm always trying to simplify it. Those guys are really busy, and not having to process another review.
This is just the person's
yeah. Mm-hmm. So I have a draft motion. Okay. I'll propose a committee for that, and then we can continue discussion. So my motion would be that you support staff's recommendation with one exception, and that exception is to maintain the option for applicants to lock rates for 3 years, or elect to pay the current rate at time of building permit.
We've got a motion. Do we have a second?
That makes sense.
Yes, it does. It makes sense.
Yeah.
I'll second.
Okay, so there's a motion and a second. Discussion.
I can't support that. I'm sorry.
No,
because of the more time or cost at time of issuance. I just don't think it's
even.
We beat on these guys all the time for, gee, that's not reasonable. Be reasonable. And I think it makes it more difficult to take that argument.
Even though there's a process by which they can still do it. It's just,
well, that would be my argument. There is still a process. If you don't like the rate you're stuck at, go through the established process. If you got a big project, you're going to it's the economy, the scale is there, you're going to go. How do we argue, be reasonable?
Well, I think it's already in there. It says right here that then the stuff is crossed out. It kind of gives you the option already to do it at time of building permit. So you can elect to do your application to lock it or not lock it. And we want it a little bit later with the proposal. Yeah, it's on the one that says 2C, item 2C.
Section B.
Yeah. Item 2C at top.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, section B.
It separates the base on uses.
Yeah, right.
I'm sorry, Gary, on this page right here?
Yeah, the stuff that's crossed out.
Yeah.
In there, there's it's a fairly complicated process, but it does allow for, you know, it says it's not for 3 years, or you can defer to building permit. It's mostly if an inch of development is not sufficiently defined at the permit. Time of permit. That was standard for now.
Any further discussion?
All right. Other than I'll just say I see on point, right?
So, sorry, I was late.
During discussions.
All right.
Sorry.
So we've got a motion and a second to adopt the code language, right? We're adopting the whole.
With one exception. Yeah, I think all the stuff has been done. We're there at 95% of it, if not more. It's just that one policy issue of getting rid of the 3-year vesting. And we've been in discussions before with Marty on this because he gets, and one of the reasons I suggested is because he doesn't like the idea of having to be close to 3Gs for these things when they change. And we had a meeting at VIA office. He was saying, well, we need to come up with some way that we can do this with less process, because the purpose of the locking for 3 years is to give certainty to the applicant. It wasn't really to give certainty to the county. So when we go with the intent of why that's in there, it really wasn't meant to go both ways. It was with the assumption that fees almost always go up. That's what they can do now. So if fees are going down, they're going down for a reason, and that's because the county changed their capital facilities plan. They don't need the money.
Based on the change to
based on the new capital facility plan. That's why I'm doing it, although I do understand your position. It seems like you want your cake and eat it too. But in this case, the intent of the 3-year lock is to provide certainty and prevent from rising rates. And if it does go down, there's a reason for it. And that's less capital facility and less than they need to build the plan out. So I guess I would stick with what I
So we have a motion and a second. Discussion closed. Let's go ahead and vote. All in favor, aye.
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 Opposed?
Aye.
Abstentions? Motion passed.
Can I stand or
make a read? Thank you, Matt.
I don't agree. But thank you. Let's move on. The next item, Mr. Albrecht, the 2015 Spillable Land Report.
Yeah. Gary Alvin, community planning, some talk about the 2016 buildable land report real quick. Just a brief update. We're doing more of an FYI. So we're going to just go through this real quick. So the agenda, that's it right there. So the purpose of the Growth Management Act, so it's a requirement of RCW 3678-215, requires that we review and evaluate the residential and non-residential lands inside the urban growth areas. To meet a deadline, a state mandated deadline of June 30th, 2015. Background, for the buildable lands, statute requires cities and counties to provide determine a sufficient amount of land for population employment. So the county has worked in collaboration with the cities with the 2015 buildable land report. A little bit about its methodology. This is the third buildable land report. We've had two others, one in 2002 and one in 2007. And the report's based on actual development since 2007. I'm putting a link right here to show you where all this information goes. Working with the cities, they send me monthly permit information. I compile it with IT and we end up coming up with a report that looks something like this. Just to show you where this stuff is at. This has been going on for 2007. And just go over some quick countywide trends. The total growth rate from 2007 to 2014 is about 1.13%. Something to look at for fun. What's been going on since 1995? As far as births go, births and deaths have been pretty much constant. And as far as migrations go, the migrations were really impacted from our recent recession, the Great Recession. Countywide trends, households, average percent change is about 1%, and for jobs, about 0.69%. So since 2007, we've added 6,800 new jobs, and about 11,000 new households were added to Clark County. And as far as observations go, based on actual building permit data, this is what we've gotten. Vancouver's kind of in the lead. They've gotten almost 6.5 units per acre.
You don't have the Clark County urban area on that?
No, we just went with the city data.
And that's per gross acre?
So it's net.
For net acre?
Yeah, per net acre.
So what's subtracted out then?
What do you mean?
So that's with infrastructure out? Critical areas out?
Yes.
Okay, so all those things out? Mm-hmm. So just average lot size basically it up?
Basically, yeah.
Okay.
So it's single family and multi-family. Yeah. Multi-family's been pretty good, it looks like. Based on the data that we collected. Five grounds to leave there, almost 25 units per acre. And as far as capacity estimates go, 2015 vacant global lands model, there are 7,513 net residential acres. And at a potential of 7 dwelling units per acre at 2.66 persons per household, the land could accommodate 136,820 people. So the urban growth estimate right now is at 118,114 persons. January 1, 2015, Clark County population estimate is 448,845. So in the end, the 2015 baseline model has capacity to accommodate the urban growth projection.
Gary, what's the time frame? Urban growth estimate is 118,000 over what?
20 years. 2035.
Okay.
This is going into the non-residential real quick. So the baseline model shows it's 2,057 net buildable commercial acres and 3,982 net proposal industrial acres. So the 2015 Bakerman model shows this potential capacity of 76,978 jobs, plus the public sector jobs. They're not included in the Bakerman model. As far as there's a redevelopment factor, the city wanted us to include also 16,775, which are not cast in the Bakerman model. So adding those two numbers together, potential of 101,153 jobs inside the urban growth areas. So the next steps, there's a planning commission work session tonight, and then on the 10th is a board work session, and after that, we'll send a letter up, we'll send a bill of report up to the Department of Commerce by June 30th, 2015. And that's
it. Do you have your assumptions in this document? I know you just went through kind of the slides on there. Oh, there they are.
So the assumptions that we looked at were from 2007.
The 2007 baseline?
Yes.
Okay. 8 feet is great. It's like 36 by Bridgeville Campus. Those are the app infrastructure of 27.7%. There we go again.
So any action you're looking for us to do? Is this more information?
Yeah, just let me know.
Yeah. Okay.
So I may have missed it. So it seemed like you were saying, or it was showing that under the assumptions and everything that goes behind all this, that we've got a surplus of land, or at least we have more land necessarily than we need to meet the 20-year goal for residential. They didn't say we were up.
There's capacity for that, yes.
There's that in 100% capacity. Did I miss it for industrial, commercial, or whatever? Or where was the? Are we good, or do we need expansion? No, or
it was job based.
Yeah. Job based. Okay,
based on the redevelopment and the public sector jobs, which so, generally don't require any buildings because, as far as the model goes, public lands are existing.
Okay.
So that's why we add those numbers
right
to the big land model. So there is capacity
for it. So what this says is the urban growth boundary, as we're proposing it right now, right? Or do the various...
Yes, as we're proposing it.
Right.
By looking at it with the 2015 big land model for the next 20 years, there is capacity within the current growth boundaries to accommodate the residential and non-residential population targets.
So it could support no growth, no change in the balance.
Yeah, it does show that.
It does show that, okay. Yeah, I was toning it down a little.
And I know everybody knows this, I just can't remember. The infrastructure factor of 27.7% and then 25% for industrial, that's everything, environmental, roads.
Not environmental.
Just roads. Willing buyer, willing seller. All those variables that go into how much land is actually truly available into the marketplace. What other, besides the infrastructure, what other variables are included in this
market factor? There's a 10% market factor for that.
What does market factor mean? Willing buyer, willing seller?
Pretty much. Without going in depth, some people call it market factor, some people call it a forge factor. It is just that if you need, let's say, 10 acres for industrial land, you add additional 10% on top of that. Say you need 10 acres, 10% of that 10 acres, you add that additional acreage to allow for fluctuation, willing sellers, willing buyers, and some land tie up in the court, just for a variety of reasons. So you add additional cushion, if you will. That's what that means.
Is that calculation all, or is that a industry standard number, or what? Where did that come
from? There are studies that have shown that you need that when you're sizing your urban growth boundary, so that you don't size the boundary too tight.
Yeah.
You know, so, and Commerce have also, State Department of Commerce I've done their own research. I made recommendations to counties planning on the GMA when you're sizing your UGA. Here are the ranges that are reasonable.
Thank you. One last question, I'll be done. How do you account for the environmental factors?
Good question.
Well, it's the vacant land model accounts for that. So it looks at the constrained areas.
Well, I just pointed to where would I find that in here? Could I just say,
What are you looking at?
I'm looking on your page.
Just looking at the baseline assumptions.
Remember our available land report?
Remember that presentation that Bob?
Well, yes, remember it. But I don't see it.
That's. Because it's
background. towards the back.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. So from the table of contents, the vacant land model.
If you go to 29,
and it's
beginning of the vacant land model.
Thank you.
Yes, you read all of that. You can see even on page 30. What may be considered
so there's the accounting for it.
Yes.
It's complex, so it's not a factor. It's based on a GIS model.
Yes.
And assumptions.
Best thing they
can
do.
Yeah, right. It's the best information available.
Constrained lands included, et cetera, et cetera. Yeah,
exactly.
Thank you.
How does you have these baseline assumptions from the 2007 comprehensive plan? How would this change, or will it be changing with the assumptions for the 2015 comprehensive plan?
Well, I think the biggest assumption is that changes with the persons per household.
Yeah.
So it went from 2.59 to 2.66.
And the population growth rate assumption.
Well, it changed. So because from the 2007 plan, it looked at 2.2% in that first 6-year period, and then 2.2 the first 6 years and 2% after that.
So really, this is what we have as of like right this second. But these numbers are going to change.
Yes.
Yeah. And this is essentially looking backwards at 2007 to now to see how we've been doing with our assumptions.
Gotcha. All right.
And so when we look at it 7 years after we adopt this plan, we'll be looking at the new assumptions and see how we did compared to that.
Okay. And then the bottom line is your assumptions are pretty much on par?
Well, so if you look at this slide, so 2.2% was supposed to be for the first 6 years.
Yes.
Okay. And what we see here is 1.13%.
Gotcha.
So that's the first 6 years.
Gotcha.
So it didn't quite happen as assumed. So the assumption now is basically 1%. So now it's more accurate.
But that was before the...
That was during the recession.
Looking back.
Duly noted.
That's it for me.
Okay. All right.
So the only thing I will mention is... because this is an area that we've had conversations, and I'm not here to defend that, but I think it's on page, what is that?
Page 22.
On observations.
The last two sentences.
You can see on the infrastructure summary that, again, this is looking back on what has occurred, and you can see that on the observations from 2007 till now, looking at what have occurred on the ground, the way we look at how much have been devoted for infrastructure relative to residential and commercial, we are really below that 27.7 and 25%. Now, that does not mean that going forward, that's what it's going to be. So we did acknowledge that and I've asked that as we begin to implement the stormwater, that we begin to collect data to see how we change this going forward. That's all I could add. I have nothing more to add. I know that it's an area that we have expressed concern. concerned that they're not using it. They're not accounting for potential changes that are coming as a result of the new stormwater regulations. I agree with you, but I have no data to support me changing that. The cities are saying they wouldn't either. So, and I believe our stormwater rate will become effective in 2016. Yeah, so.
Well, there you are.
There's two things.
The Lewis and Clark things are
easy. I don't want to hide it. I just want to make it clear.
I like you. That's
possible.
Thank you.
All right. Well, getting closer to writing Chip.
Yeah.
Good.
Greg, item 4 bylaw.
Yeah, I might need a little more than 2 minutes, but I won't need 30 minutes. So this is, I think, basically a little bit of housekeeping here. Given with the charter, and it just really didn't come to surface until we had five board member reappointments that were due up at the end of March, which of course we addressed those. But in that process, I had a little bit of time with our county manager, Mark McCauley, and he brought to my attention, he says, hey, we need to look at the language here. We're still referencing the board. And make it current to the charter. I was out of town, not here on our April meeting and May meeting, and thus didn't bring it then, but here now with it. So the intent and this of course is just draft, but I thought to help facilitate that, I just went ahead and highlighted all of the areas in our bylaws that reference the board of what at the time was the Board of County Commissioners, and then I think the direction on this, if I might offer, is if anything in the document that we find is still policy driven, that would stay with the county councilors. However, if it's primarily executive or administrative, I think to square with the charter, that should actually go or reference to the county manager. So. That was the intent. I guess maybe I just will very quickly go through those from the beginning. The first sentence is actually a reference back in the beginnings, you know, when we were established, so I left that unchanged, Board of County Councilors. We service or were advisory to the departments, of course. I just simply added the county manager and then still to the Board of County Councilors. When we get into our duties, however, that I believe becomes more executive or administrative. So in the heading there, I struck county councilors, went replaced with county manager. Same in item C down there. And then in item E, we review and comment as requested by the county manager, board, and or senior staff. So just an add there to the county manager. Over to page 2. Under section 3, membership, members are now appointed by the county manager. And then section 5, similarly, the at-large positions recommended to the county manager, no longer the board, all of the positions to the county manager, not the board, and vacancies occurred, going to process through the county manager, not the board. And then finally, another vacancy item there at the bottom, that county manager, no longer the board. So, but of course, this is for the council here to actually whether or not to proceed. Or I think Section 8 addresses any amendments to the bylaws, what I'm going off of. So I think it's actually deep board members to... decide on this, and then we would bring I think a recommendation back and have our allow our attorney to review the recommendations and then proceed forward with actually amending or changing or updating the bylaws. So one other item which I'd made note of, actually representing Mark McCauley on this also, he was inquiring whether the deed would want to look at actually extending the terms beyond 2 years. But maybe it's a little too frequent on the 2 year up. We've got a little bit of history with this now, of course, and many of the members do choose to seek reappointment. So if that's kind of becoming a little bit of a churning wheel, maybe we just look at extending those terms to at least 3 or 4 years.
One thing I've noticed is that, even though there's low risk, is that when you're voted in as a chair or vice chair, and suddenly your term is now up and you need to reapply, I mean, there's a small risk that you're not going to be reappointed, but there's still a risk. Sorry. Oh yeah, by the way, I was appointed vice chair for this year. Please don't kick me off the board. And I think that that might alleviate some of that with an extended term. And that's the only thing that I've seen. I also, you know, I've reappointed 3 times to you, Eric. How many times have you reappointed? Yeah.
Well, and like, I mean, this year there's five. There was 5 up for reappointment. That's a quorum right there.
You know, I say Planning Commission, I think, is 6 years and then down. I had a 6-year term, and then down to 4 being the smallest amount, I think. But I think the nice thing about those terms and the longer terms is the continuity you get, because you're dealing with a lot of stuff that you've, you know, seen in the past and just, you know, getting used. Like, I'm new to this board, or, you know, 2 years, not 2 years into it, but 1.5 into it or whatever. But, you know, it takes a while to get ramped up and, you know, get on board, so...
The question I would have, Greg, is how is that implemented? Is that retroactive? Is that starting with people starting new terms? That's the big question I had, because I remember Mark bringing that up, and, you know, I don't know how the board feels as a whole or individually about that. But the one thing that came to my mind was, okay, so now does our current term go from 2 to 4? Those people that have been here for...
I don't think so, because we have expiration dates.
Right.
So those would stay. This would be, in my mind, probably.
So it would be worked out of the way.
Yeah.
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 Yeah. Yeah, that's fine.
I'll be self-serving. I think doing it in the longer term is better.
I think 3 years is a good one. Yeah. Road. I agree.
What's that? You said 3 years?
Or? Yeah, I just...
That's where I am, too, actually.
Because it just seems like I spit in a letter last year.
2 years goes quick.
It does. At the same time, I think it's important to open up opportunities for new people to apply to the position.
Yeah.
And to change. I'm right where you are.
So for the sake of discussion, moving forward, I think we need to make a recommendation on this. Is that...
Yes, I think that's what Section 8 directs us to do.
So I would propose...
Requires a two-thirds vote.
Okay.
I wanted to address Steve's issue. Would there be a way to now, if we're going to increase it to 3 from 2, is there a way to stagger
them? Yeah, that's what I was thinking. If you're going to increase the term, you should stagger them so more people are falling in those, instead of it being every other, I mean... With it being 2-year terms, you've got 5 1 year and 4 the next.
Right.
If you extend it to 3-year terms, we can go 3 each year, where their terms are expiring 3 a year, and you're not running into that same, whoops, if we have a quorum of them, we need to be reappointed, or we don't.
Well, yeah. Yeah, I mean, if something had happened, and I mean, it's good to bring new. It is always good to bring new blood on, but losing 5 people off the board right off the bat, if someone, you know, right. County manager decided not to reappoint anyone, that's a bit of a you know, disruption. I think that staggering is great.
And just looking at, if we were going to think about something like that, we do have sort of 3 technical people, so logically we could stagger those 1 every year. The rest of them are 1 or 2 members, so figure out how to
support. I think that's a little more logistics. I think the outline you have there is good. Mm-hmm. One little thing I noticed in the first sentence, the Board of Clark County Commissioners requests to change that to counselors. Mm-hmm. I don't know. section on purpose.
I was going to do that, but I didn't have my red pen.
Yeah, so otherwise, and then after that, it's fine. So
first page.
Yeah, I see that. I only take pause because, I mean, it was the commissioner's. It was the commissioner's.
Oh, back, it was the commissioner's.
In, back in the day.
Yeah, but then it refers to the BOCC.
Yeah, so maybe you wouldn't have the parenthetical. Is that right, Jamie?
Yeah, you take out the parenthetical.
Yeah, okay. Yeah.
Move it to this. The next time you have it, you would say Board of County Council.
Okay.
And I would also remove the word has.
Just get rid of has, it's established.
Yeah.
That makes it more historical.
Or something like the Board of County Commissioners. Now,
the
Board
of County Councilors established to develop an engineering budget.
Okay. Yeah, I think it works.
But I agree, and the term expirations. Yeah.
And then there could be a chart. Then you need to do a little bit of legwork on it to put a chart together.
Maybe we can.
I want a 3-year term.
Maybe we could head toward a motion of the framework before.
I will move that we recommend this be adopted as conceptually presented. I'm not sure if that's right.
Yep.
Okay. And then the term. Terms of the office section will need to be defined further.
I've moved it 3 years.
I'm sorry?
We're recommending 3 years.
Yeah. The term length will be 3 years, but the staggered nature of it needs to be defined more.
Okay.
I know that's awkward, but it moves it forward.
Yeah. So we've got motion. We have a second.
Sorry.
All right. Any discussion?
I would just want to say that we want to make sure that conceptually with the proposed changes to the first paragraph that we just discussed.
Yes.
Yep. Any other comments? All right, let's go ahead and vote. All in favor of that?
Aye.
Opposed? Thank you, Greg.
Yeah, thanks, Greg.
All right, you're welcome.
Good change.
Okay. There we go.
Public comments. Anybody? Anything to add?
I don't know if you have now or later, but we have a letter about the ADUs, and I just wanted to chat with a couple folks about that after the meeting.
The only other thing that I would have would be we haven't had, I know that we just had the vacant. The lens model update. We haven't had a comp plan update since February. Maybe it's that time. I don't know how many
people wait
about that.
I would wait until
August. Wait until August? What?
Because that's the way it's always been.
No, because the way the schedule is laying out.
Okay.
I'll put it for August here.
Okay.
That would be Oliver, right?
Yeah.
It's all
on
the table. Terry's brought up a couple of items. One of those, I think, we're hopefully going to move for next month. Terry and I, we've hashed on this retaining wall property line setback issue a couple of years ago. Terry's got some major concerns, so. Tentatively, we're looking into July for that.
It's on the agenda.
Next month.
So I guess those that have been here before that heard on that, let me know so I don't
read. No, we haven't. I don't know as if we've necessarily discussed in this forum.
Oh, okay.
We have in practice.
We've had a couple of changes. It was modified a little bit. And I think there might be some more clarification that's needed.
It's an ongoing struggle. So.
Yeah.
And so have we got Jim? Nor confirmed for that yet. Because I know Mark wanted
on which one now?
To be involved
the retaining
walls and setbacks.
That was here.
I've got Terry on there. Do you, but Jim, make sure Jim is added.
Marty left.
Jim and Marty.
Jim more so.
Okay.
Marty will be involved in. So.
Not with my Marty.
Well, I mean, help the conversation.
Okay.
So now the time. Are we talking agenda? Can we talk agenda? Okay. Unfortunately, I'm going to be gone, traveling. For the July meeting,
we moved it off the holiday, Jeff.
No, I already did it. That's what I was going to ask. The other thing it seems quick because I think I just did it in November, December, or January, or something there, February. Didn't I just do it? I just talked final plat.
It was a few months ago. I think.
Right. Okay. I'll update it, but unless time's flown, it only seemed like it's been a few months ago. But
you're right. It was that. We want you to come back every other month.
I don't mind.
Should we put you as a tentative for a different another month or just
August? I can do it.
August is good.
Or okay. September, whatever.
I think the main point there is if you want to, like I talked about with the board, is that we want to start getting some of this stuff etched in stone.
Yeah, I want to make sure. I want to monitor it because there were a lot of great improvements, and there were some that they were also looking at improving further. And that we're in progress, and it just needs to be monitored to see, it could be a quick report.
You might want to talk to Jocelyn because she's had some not so good instances or experiences just recently.
Okay.
So, and I know that she wants to bend somebody's ear about it.
Oh, I'd like to, yeah.
May not be yours. I think she wants to go.
No, yeah, it may not be mine.
Staff here, but maybe if you talk to her, find out at least what it is.
Or she can come and also come to our meeting because that's
the next meeting.
You know,
Jocelyn. Do you really want two people from Olson Engineering?
Doesn't matter to me. The more the merrier if people are having problems.
It's just not Chad.
Everyone has different experiences. So.
Two questions, real quick. One was storm. You know, we'd come in, they gave us an update on stormwater. DOE was going to comment back, and then so I didn't know what comment came from that.
We have an update.
Okay. End
of
next month.
End of this month is when we should be coming back, I think. What I heard today was that the county responded to some red line comments on that and then sent it back up to DOE, and DOE, they've indicated that they're going to respond by the end of this month.
Okay.
So
it's looking good, but it's, I think, probably not
working. Yeah, it's in the details, I guess.
Okay.
But I mean, this is holding up projects, not all over the place. Everybody's kind of sitting on the edge of that chair waiting, and we've said, oh, well, it will be then. It's like, look, this is a state agency. They're under no obligation to get done in any given amount of time, so you just have to kind of be patient.
And then the last one was, I think there may have been some discussion on final engineering and post-system reviews. They used to be able to run concurrently, and now they're not.
I brought that up at the presentation to the board.
Okay.
I think staff heard. So that's still something that's going to be on our agenda, and it's going to be forthcoming because that's an efficiency and it's a timing issue that I think benefits everyone except an overworked Clark County staff.
Okay, understood. Okay. Thank you.
So right now I have Terry for next month in July, the retaining walls and setbacks. That's the only agenda item for right now, if I've got it right. And then we've got two in August. We've moved Jeff's on the final plat to August, and we've got the comp plan with Oliver. So
I'll revisit some of my notes since I saw anything else.
It's supposed to be next
week. Yeah, I think we've, there were no other public comments, so let's adjourn the meeting.
Okay.
Did you note that I came in?
Yeah.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Okay.
Well, did you sign in?
Oh, I didn't see the word.
If you sign in, I'll put it in the minutes.
All right,
signing in.
Holly.
Thank you.
Set a
revision
for the agency.